Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yeah, the announcement to postpone football was extremely disappointing. Witnessing the confusion on our guys' faces when I shared their news of postponement last week was gut-wrenching. It is my responsibility to help our guys chase their dreams, and delivering the news felt like I was doing the opposite. It felt like I was taking away their dream to play at Penn State, even if for some it's only temporary. We as a coaching staff and administration fought as hard as we could to fulfill the desires of our student athletes and their parents to play this fall. While I appreciate the complexities and difficulties of this decision for the leaders of our conference, I'm extremely frustrated because we still have very few answers to communicate to our young men and their families about their futures and very little understanding of the factors contributing to the decisions.
That was Penn State head coach James Franklin discussing the decision made by the Big Ten to cancel their football season. Welcome back in to Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson, taking you through this Thursday morning. Joe, the situation with the Big Ten, as we continue to kind of unpack this and the days have gone by, the communication or lack thereof on how this vote took place, how they came to this decision to call off the season as early as they did. And it's just been so frustrating, I think, for people inside that conference and specifically for coaches and players. And you've seen Justin Fields basically going on a media tour all around the country with his We Want to Play movement and the petition that he's got going, which I think at this point is over 300,000 strong in terms of its signatures. You've heard James Franklin in that clip come out and say, look, you know, there's no communication here. Me trying to explain this to my players has been difficult because it kind of feels like I'm crushing their dreams and I can't really give them a good reason why. It's just been a really troubling and I think confusing situation going on in the Big Ten of making the decision as soon as they did, but also after that seeming like there's been almost no communication on what actually happened via the vote. It's just been a really strange situation in the Big Ten.
Yeah, so the Big Ten did put out it put out an open letter. So Kevin Warren puts out an open letter, and you know, basically, I mean, look, this is definitely something that should have come out right away with it, and maybe it sheds some light. I mean, I think the big thing that stood out to me is there's simply too much, I'm quoting this, we do not know about the virus, recover from infection, longer-term effects. While the data on cardiomyopathy is preliminary and incomplete, the uncertain risk was unacceptable at this time. Now, of course, there have been, you know, in the SEC, and AL.com had a story about this, you know, a doctor who said, you know, really, like, this is not a concern. I mean, look, with the Big Ten, the way they handled it was ridiculous. The way they communicated it was ridiculous. We have like this whole thing with did they vote or not? Apparently there wasn't actually a vote. I mean, right. A lot of these presidents of the Big Ten just don't want to admit that. So they're just like, oh, I didn't technically vote for it. But clearly that, like Kevin Warren said, there was a discussion and it was agreed that we were going to cancel football.
Right.
Big Ten has also made it clear, by the way, that they're not going back. I will say that I hate the way they did it, and they should have had a plan for the spring and all that stuff. I also sitting here like people going nuts on someone for trying to be safe during this time. I think everybody should maybe calm down a little bit on that. And let's wait and see what happens in the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 too.
Right, but I think the frustration is not necessarily a decision they've made. It's why did you make it so soon?
Yeah.
Because even the statement they've put out in terms of, you know, we've got preliminary data on this and, you know, the risk was just unacceptable. Well, that's fine. Why don't you wait a few more weeks or maybe another month and then make that decision where maybe you have more data?
Well, that's true. And really, I think that the next move, there should have been a move in between, probably to go to late September and basically the same time period as the SEC.
Right.
The timing problem for them is their plan was, let's go early, build in more weeks where we can sneak in games if we have a bad week, and then that will help us to go early, which I thought at the time was a good idea. And the next move is probably, okay, let's give it another month, see what happens. Again, the saliva direct thing is something that has happened since they made the decision. I don't know I don't know how quickly that actually takes effect or right. makes an impact, but still, it's a big development. So I agree. It felt very, and again, like 5 days after the big unveil on Big Ten Network,
yeah.
Like I promise you, the SEC, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to end up actually playing, but the SEC is not coming out in a couple days after their schedule unveil on SEC Network and saying, "Nah, never mind.
We're done."
They're going to let us all argue about the schedules for a while first. You know?
Yes. Do you feel if you're the Big Ten and you're looking around and you're a player in the Big Ten, and we've heard Lane Kiffin talk about this, and we're going to get to that here in just a second. He wants, you know, players to be able to transfer from the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. If you're a Big Ten player this year and you're going to be forced to sit out like you're going to be, because like you said, Joe, Big Ten's made it clear this is not going to be reversed. So if you're a Big Ten player and you're not a guy that's, you know, like Justin Fields, who I don't think it really matters if he plays this year or not in terms of his NFL future, he's going to get drafted. But there are a lot of guys that could be on the fringe that need to have a really good senior season to get drafted. Like, what do you do if you're one of those players? Like, that's who I really feel for in this situation is those guys, and not even necessarily guys that are about to get drafted, but those seniors who are going to miss out on this year. I mean, that just sucks.
Oh, big time. Well, and the hard part is, yeah, you could – I think that there should be a waiver if they play. I mean, first of all, the NCAA has now – a big development yesterday, they've frozen eligibility for next year, which is, I think, the right move. Now, it's going to make it really interesting moving forward with your rosters for some of these sports. If you're freezing everyone's eligibility, you're now just basically transferring them to the – whoever's a sophomore in the 2020-21 year is a sophomore in the 21-22 year. So you think about recruiting and right. scholarship limits and all that, it's going to be very complicated. I also will look at that and say, okay, but Cade Mays can't get a waiver. You know?
Like, what are we doing here?
I mean, you think about those two things. Everyone has their eligibility frozen. This year basically doesn't count, but Cade Mays and some of these other guys can't get a waiver. But then some other guys randomly do. So, again, have some kind of consistency. Tell us why you're making some of these decisions that don't seem to make sense. But on the transfer thing, I do think that they should be able to do that. The problem is if you're a kid in the Big Ten looking at, man, you know what? They've got a spot at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin wants me, and I could come in and start. Well, so then what happens when you transfer and then the SEC spikes the season on September 8th?
Right.
I mean, imagine that.
you just transfer back? What do you do at that
right.
point?
I mean, imagine being in that situation. You can't feel – I mean, you can't feel – I don't know what percent you feel. You sure don't feel close to 100% that the season's
no.
happening. I mean, I think right now, I guess each day, I'm a little closer to, like, feeling like they're actually going to give it a go, but I'm going to stick with my two-week rule here, Robbie. Big Ten and give it 2 weeks of just don't even listen. They're all going to say they're going to play. Then we'll see, because then they have to get closer to the nitty-gritty of can we pull this off. And then we'll see.
Well, we've also just now gotten into the part of the schedule of the academic calendar where students have started to come back. I mean, what was that, a week ago where students started to come back for the most part? So this next week is really when you have to start to pay attention of, okay, what are the effects of that? Like how good of a job
have these teams done of keeping their players as isolated as they possibly can be. But it's not. See, but that's the thing. It's, I mean, the teams are not going to screw this up. And honestly, every SEC university, if they want this to happen right now, should just say, you know what? Sorry, you're remote learning. Yep. Michigan State. I've got a buddy from college whose kid went to Michigan State this year, and he's, I don't know what year he is, a sophomore or junior. He's got an off-campus apartment. He's paid for like a year, like a, has a lease now for a year. All the kids are back. They're going to school, and then stuff starts happening. North Carolina has a huge outbreak. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, we're going online. Notre Dame has a huge outbreak, right? Because college kids are packed into small spaces, and they're partying, and they don't care.
And Mac Brown, I think, has come out and said that, you know, them going online now is actually going to be probably better for his team in the long run. Because now he can.
Yeah. This is.
There's no students there.
If the SEC wants football, like, don't bring. I mean, I know I've got a neighbor, you know, whose daughter just moved in the other day, Knoxville. But I'm saying, like, it's not going to go well. And so go online. And bubble up your football teams as much as you can, isolate them from the students, and do remote learning, and then you can maybe do it. But it's just going to be widespread outbreaks all over these campuses if you don't. And that's the biggest reason that there's pessimism. The SEC doctor we interviewed at The Athletic was the question was basically like, are you optimistic? Like that my concern is that it's students coming into these places and what's going to happen. And so far, I mean, UNC, did you see the student newspaper headline?
Yeah.
It's a cluster bleep.
You know. Yeah.
God bless college newspapers.
Yeah.
But seriously, that's a great word for it. So I like Michigan State, I went back. So they move in, you pay for your year lease, and like a week into everyone moving in, like, never mind, remote learning. Please leave campus. If you're off campus, we would like you to go back to your hometowns. Well, some of them are going to still live in the college town. But think about that. Like, you talk about screwing people over. You're screwing the town over. You're taking everybody out of there, 45,000 people. But also people who have just signed leases now, they're locked into that, and you have to live there and be on your laptop. But if you want college football, to me, you better hope your university that you root for has remote learning.
Well, and, you know, remote learning is not a new thing. Like, I started going to college in 2010. There was remote learning then, so this is not some new concept. To be honest with you, the fact that we really haven't decided to just do this remotely to begin with and having people come back on campus is kind of mind-blowing to me.
Well,
like, it just seems very like a very simple solution.
But again, college athletics, billion-dollar industry.
Correct.
College, trillion-dollar industry, and every university president out there is like, if we just go remote, why are people paying us tuition to come here?
We're gonna
do all we can to say we have a real college experience, and now it's like, oh no,
yeah, not good, my friend.
Vaccine.
We need one of those.
One word.
Need one of those quickly. When we come back, we will continue the college football discussion. Also, Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic will join us at 7:30 to talk some NFL. So looking forward to that. That's what's coming up. Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back in. Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode and Munson. We have another edition of Old Man Rexrode today. He has gotten cold in the studio and in the middle of August is throwing on an athletic hoodie. So even when he's not giving himself a personal shout-out on the air for his work, he is advertising it on his hoodie. It's impressive, really.
Munson also just shook his head. Cause so moving that mic, even with the mic cold, that makes a sound?
Yeah. Old man Joe, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, this will be a great segment. We just let's pitch
we
this
We may
now.
Need to plan this, yes.
Let's plan this. Joe, do you always have something to complain about by Friday?
I actually don't think I'm that big of a complainer. Now, am I stupid and and technologically deficient? Yes.
Am I stupid? Maybe so.
And yeah, I do think it must be my circulation here. I swear it gets freezing here. You're fine. You're in a t-shirt.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I had a winter jacket basically yesterday. So maybe that's a circulation thing. I don't think I complain that much, do I?
No, Not really.
You know, I mean,
I'm sure we could find some things to complain about by a Friday of every week, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. A lot of it is myself. Like, I complain about my own oldness, too. It's pathetic. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if you guys want to do an old man Joe segment, we can do that.
Yes, let's do an old man Joe segment. You just pick something, this new generation, that just grinds your gears, Joe.
Yeah.
You want to start? You want to, like, a practice run right now?
Well, like, so my 12-year-old, that's cap. You know this term? That's cap. Yeah. Capping.
What? What is that?
Your son saying that?
Oh, it's all he says. Everything, because especially if it's like, no, you didn't clean your room well enough. That's cap.
I have no idea what that
means. You're capping.
It,
it means, I guess, that's a lie. That's not true. Yeah. So Munson, you're
Munson,
young. You're
you
young enough. You're young enough to still understand that, Munson.
Yeah, but I understand it, but I don't use it because, like, once you get to a certain age, words like that just don't come off like cool anymore. Like, I'm 30 on Sunday.
You're
and I
a man. You're 30.
Yeah, I can't just be like, oh man, it's a lit. I'm 30.
It's lit.
Yeah. It's lit. Like, I'm a 30-year-old man. Like, I can't be out here saying, oh man, this place is lit. It just makes me sound like, who's this guy? Who's old fart over here?
Speaking of lit, did you see
hello,
the Titans?
Young people.
Did you see the Titans yesterday come out with like their new LED system at Nissan Stadium where like the lights can turn red and now blue? Like, they could just fade them out. Like the Packers this year when they scored a touchdown, it just went pitch black in Lambeau and they had LED lights just like shooting down. Apparently the Titans could do that now and everybody's like, why would you announce this the day after we were told that nobody could come to your games?
Replaces fans.
I guess so.
In place of humans, got the LED lights.
Just don't do virtual fans. Virtual fans are just weird.
There is the noise. The crowd noise is a thing now.
Yeah, I think the crowd noise being pumped in is going to be a thing. I'm with you, Munson. Like, the virtual fans for the first week or so, I was like, okay, this is it's cool, whatever. Now I look at it and I'm like, okay. We got to stop.
They serve no purpose. You can't hear them like half of the time because, trust me, if I was a virtual fan, you'll hear me cuss out Kyle Kuzma like all game if that was the case. But you can't hear them. And then, especially like on free throws, usually you get people distracting you. They're just sitting in their computer chairs, just relaxing. And just, you know, it serves no purpose. Like, the purpose of it, I guess, was the visual of having fans there, but it doesn't have the same "we have fans in the stands" impact, because that's why you're seeing the Mavs, you know, tied in a series with the Clippers. That's why you see the Blazers able to beat the Lakers in game one. That's why you see all these upsets, because it's like there's those virtual fans don't do anything. Like, so you mean to tell me we fought for a one seed so we can control the first two games to have virtual fans that don't make any sounds?
That whole thing to me boiled down to making an excuse for the Lakers, but I hear you.
Wow.
Well, no. But if fans were in the stands, I think game one, a lot of calls in that game would have been impacted because fans would have been in the stands. A lot of pressure on those referees.
That is a good point about of all the sports, officials are most influenced, I think, in basketball.
Oh yeah,
because they're just so close. Have that charge block? That charge block? I'm just gonna go with the home team. Those endorphins, man.
In terms of like
the fear and flight thing,
the officiating so far, post pandemic, well, in the middle of pandemic, sports, NBA, it's a bad look, man. Just how sensitive these officials are now. They're teeing up people left and right. Like, Major League Baseball umpires have always been this way. Like, they're way too guilty of making the game about themselves rather than about the actual game. And that's always been one of my pet peeves with baseball. I went on a rant yesterday about baseball. I could probably go on a rant about baseball every day. The NBA, so far in the playoffs, just how soft these referees are, because I guess they can hear everything now.
That's my only guess.
Whatever. I mean, look, dude. Again, I'm one of those guys. Unless they're like saying things that you shouldn't be saying to another human being under any circumstance whatsoever, let it go. You get paid so much money to officiate a game. Let it go. Just laugh and move on.
Yeah.
I realize not everybody's like that, but yeah. Like, why are you teeing up Porzingis for that? There's no fight.
Yeah, I mean, you altered the outcome of that game.
Yeah.
With something that was really questionable.
You cost the Mavs a game. Yeah. So if the Mavs lose this series and in seven, or they lose this series in six, you're going to look back on that game like, they probably should have won game one, though. And who's to say that if the Mavs would have won that game yesterday, the Clippers would have came out a lot different in game two. It would have been a lot different. Maybe because they know that they're down 1-0 in the series instead of, you know, up 1-0.
Right.
So maybe they play a little different, and maybe the series isn't tied. Maybe it is. But you cost them a game pretty much because of your emotions. And referees been like that in basketball for the longest. Like we've saw with Rasheed Wallace. We've seen with guys like all through the NBA.
They're always picking on Draymond.
Yeah. Always picking on Draymond. Always picking on Draymond Green. And now Dwight Howard's the new victim.
Oh, man. He gets just called for every foul when he's within like 5 feet of someone.
They
man.
Had to go back and review one the other night. I thought he was going to get his fourth foul in like 3 minutes. I was like, dude.
I mean, like that.
Come on.
Like he was like 3 feet away.
He wasn't even close to him. Yeah.
Hey, it's a hard sport to officiate, though. I do think that sport, I think you can make the case that's the toughest sport to officiate.
NBA?
Yeah. Because it's just, you have three people and it's just so fast moving. And like the charge block stuff is so
that's
subjective.
Tough. Yeah.
You know, I know you have the circle that helps, but hey, listen. As a former intramural college basketball official,
yes,
who has been screamed and has been sworn at many times, I feel a little bit for these guys.
Did you ever like toss anybody, like a fan? Ever
not,
throw anybody out?
Not a fan, but a player.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
Were you?
And I've been tossed too. I'm not gonna lie.
Too. Yeah,
I've been tossed. Thing. One time I was like screaming at one of my coworkers. You know, like he was reffing my game, and yeah. He just called a couple terrible fouls. You know.
Full disclosure, last time I played in a men's league basketball league, full-scale brawl, it happened. Because of me,
you
I
were
started
at the
it.
Center of
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Robbie gets a little too competitive when it comes to basketball.
Sounds like you...
I've calmed down a little bit lately, but softball I used to be really bad at in terms of like how mad I would get. Now I'm fine
softball.
With it.
So I don't get the softball thing. Like, what do you get mad about in softball?
Inconsistent strike zone. Drives
okay,
me nuts.
So you're talking about the umpire. Huh?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. So yesterday I watched my lady play softball, and the umpire was calling strikes and balls, and I could not tell whether or not he was caught. Like he would be like, "Oh, strike!" And I'd be like, "What? Was that a strike? Was it a strike or a ball?" And then like the batter would look at him and be like, "So I'm out?" He was like, "Yeah."
What are you saying?
And like even in the stands, like they were he was trying to sound so like professional umpire. I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Say an actual word.
Just say strike or ball.
Strike. Yes, how hard is that?
Inside. he was like, inside. I'm like, just say strike or ball. Yeah, yeah. This is softball. This is not Major League Baseball. Come on, dude.
I guess, like, if some people do, they ask, right? Like, where did it miss? So
right.
I guess if you say, yeah.
But if you ask that too many times, then the umpires get mad. And then that's what sets me off. Like, once the umpires get mad, I'm like, I just have a bad temper.
And then,
I guess that's what we're
and
like.
Then you are. So in slow pitch, you're already 1-1 in strikes and balls.
Right.
So they can make the game go a little bit faster.
Which I love, by the way.
Yeah. And so, like, You could not understand any of the words that this dude is saying, and then all of a sudden you're out because you're like you'll get struck one to inside. You don't know what it is. It's like it's either ball or a strike.
Is it inside on the zone strike.
Yeah.
What are we talking about here?
He said inside
strike.
He said inside like multiple times, and I was like, why does he keep saying inside?
Just painted call the it corner.
Just call it a strike or a ball. I almost got mad myself, but luckily my girl was hitting dingers, so it didn't matter.
There you go.
I didn't have to complain about anything because she was hitting triples all day.
Mashing.
But
that's done.
But I was like, well, what are you saying? And there was a guy that looked at me. He's like, do you know if that was a ball or a strike? I was like, dude.
No clue, man.
I have no idea. I don't even know what this guy's saying.
Well, hey, at that level, you're not making a lot of money, right?
That's true.
So.
I try to remember that, but usually I don't remember that.
Apparently not.
A bad character flaw on my
brawling, man.
When we come back, Shiel Kapadia will join us from The Athletic. We'll dive back into the NFL. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. We are diving back into the world of NFL football, and to help us do that, we bring in Sheil Kapadia, also from The Athletic, one of Rexrode's cohorts. Sheil, what's going on, my man?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing great. Hey. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. No problem. Good to be with you. It's camp is in full swing. We're pushing forward, and I think everyone's anxious to kind of see how the next few weeks go, and then potentially it'll be week one before we even know it.
So, Sheil, we heard yesterday that I think right now there are 10 COVID-19 reserve cases in the entire league, which to me was very encouraging given the way I kind of feared this might go to start training camp. How surprised are you with how well the NFL and their players have been able to handle this so far?
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, you looked at all the other leagues and you saw baseball. Wow, they had, way more than I think what you would say, just a couple hiccups and it wasn't going great. And then you look at the NBA bubble and NHL and those are going well. And so you didn't really know what to expect. But I always just thought about it with so many players on a roster, so many personnel for each team, that it was going to be a big challenge. So I think the numbers are very encouraging, and teams and the league definitely deserve a lot of credit.
What about the bubble thought for the postseason, Sheil? I know Sean Payton has, said some stuff about that. Apparently there's at least some sort of measure of looking into that. Do you think that's a good idea, a doable idea? And what do you think the timeline would need to be on really nailing something like that down? You've got some of these teams who are actually going to have some measure of crowds this season.
It's really tough because every few weeks kind of the direction we think this thing's going to go changes. And so to look ahead to the postseason and January and what that's going to look like, it's really tough. I don't think it's a bad idea to sort of have different plans in place if you really are committed to getting this season finished and not having hiccups in between where you have to stop and start. If you can avoid that, then I don't think it's a terrible idea. You know, I think some of the experts going in thought that the bubble idea was the only way to do it. And so to me, it's like lay out plans A, B, C, and D, see how this thing goes, be ready if you need to make a detour, if you need to make a left turn, and go from there. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic on with us. And Sheil, we have a message that's come our way. In the middle of this interview, Teron Davenport has told us to tell you hello, your good friend Teron Davenport. So I've passed that message along to you.
Thank you. Teron is my guy from our time together in Philadelphia, so glad to hear he's listening and chiming in.
I mean, there's a lot of Philly connections here. Jason Wolf was here, Nick Kale's here, Teron's here. There's a lot of Philly and Nashville kind of shuttling back and forth.
That's right. Yeah, no one's given me an invite to come down and visit or anything. So maybe post pandemic, you guys can fix that for me.
Absolutely,
no, we will.
You're invited anytime. And speaking of Philly, I do want to get your thoughts on Carson Wentz, because he's a very interesting case to me. On the field, when he's been on the field, he's been good, but health has got to be a concern at this point. If you're the Eagles, what's the vibe like in Philly with Carson Wentz?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. You know, I think if you put together sort of a highlight reel of his top 10, 15, 20 plays from any given season, anyone would watch that and say, this is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But there have been health issues. There have been issues with kind of, I think, not supporting him with great talent at the wide receiver position. I think they were one of the slowest offenses in terms of team speed last year. And then the injury concerns, like you mentioned, he stayed healthy last year, but then he just kind of gets the unfortunate hit in the playoffs from Jadeveon Clowney and suffers a concussion. So, you know, that's a hit that would have knocked any quarterback out. So that's not one where you look at it and say he's injury prone. He started all 16 games in the regular season, but they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round. So there's a lot of things going on, as always, in Philly, but I think he's in pretty good position to succeed this year.
All right, Sheil, I got to ask you about the Titans, and of course you did. Sheil does a lot of awesome stuff at The Athletic. I love the unit rankings. It's there's a lot that goes into those, I know. It's also the fun read to kind of go through and see how you're viewing these teams. I think you had the Titans 9th in offense, 18th in defense. But what do you think about the Titans as an AFC contender?
I think they're, you know, I flip-flop on the Titans quite a bit this offseason. But right now I definitely view them as a playoff team, whether that means winning the AFC South or earning one of those wild card spots. You know, I think obviously the big things you look at is what they did in the offseason. And Ryan Tannehill, I mean, by every statistical measure, was a top five quarterback last year. And that was a top five offense after he took over. Now, some of the things he did, it's just going to be tough to sustain. I mean, we're talking like Joe Montana, like numbers in a few of these categories. So to me, it's going to be tough to get that guy for a full 16 games. I think you're going to see him come back down to earth a little bit, but it's a matter of how far down does he come. You know, is it instead of a top five guy, he's a top 10 guy, or is it further than that? Is he mediocre? And so I think there's obviously a lot riding on him, and we'll stay invested in him this offseason. But I got to tell you, looking at all these teams and trying to get sort of a landscape of the league, Arthur Smith is one of my favorite play callers in the NFL. And so when I was sort of debating on the Titans, you know, do I have them taking a step back? Do I have them getting back to the postseason? I just looked at that and said he was one of the most creative guys in the league last year. They schemed up explosive plays seemingly on every week. He played to his player strengths, whether that was Tannehill, Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown. And so I'm kind of putting my faith there in Arthur Smith as one of the best OCs in the league and think that they're going to be able to get back into the postseason.
Shiel Kapadia from The Athletic on the line with us. And Shiel, obviously the biggest story of the NFL offseason other than COVID-19 was Tom Brady's move down to Tampa Bay with the Buccaneers. What are your expectations this season for Brady and the Bucs?
I think they're going to be a good team. I mean, you look at it and what he was working with last year, and I mean, really, one of the worst groups of pass catchers in the NFL in New England. And now all of a sudden you go to Tampa, a team that arguably has the best pair of wide receivers in the NFL with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. I just think it's going to be a different world for Brady. Now, is there going to be decline? Yeah, you have to expect that at 43 years old. I mean, no one has done this. No one has started 16 games at 43 years old. You saw some issues with Brady's accuracy last year for sure, some of his movement, his pocket movement, those types of things. But I just think he's in position to succeed there with that coaching staff, with those wide receivers. And also, we shouldn't sleep on that defense. You know, they have one of the best front sevens they've assembled there in the NFL. So I don't think he's going to have to do it all, and I just think he's going to have more opportunities to make plays to be successful than he did last year.
All right, here's a question I've got to ask you, because this has become the new Nashville topic. It used to be like, is Mariota a franchise quarterback or not?
Right.
Now the Nashville football topic is, when is Jadeveon Clowney signing with the Titans or someone? And I know there's apparently the threat of him sitting out, which to me makes absolutely zero sense to not get paid right now a lot of money to play football in a league where you don't have a long career. But what do you think ends up happening with Clowney?
You know, I thought the Titans have made sense all along, and I'm not just saying that because I'm on a Nashville station here. I've written it going back months, because I look at the Titans and see them as a team that can contend, but certainly lost some pieces defensively, and expecting Jeffrey Simmons to make that big leap this year. And, man, if you put Clowney on that defense with him, then all of a sudden it looks a lot more exciting. It looks a lot more formidable with their pass rush. So I got to think he's going to, you know, it could be any day. It could be in the next couple of weeks. Maybe he doesn't want to go through the grind of going through training camp. I think what he expected back in March compared to what he expected now, obviously he's got to kind of recalibrate his expectations, and he's got to look at this and say, my best chance is to sign a one-year deal with a team like the Titans that has some cap space, kind of rebuild some of my value, go into next offseason, and then try to really cash in. I'm with you. I don't really see what the sense would be in sitting out the year unless, you know, he's an opt-out like we've seen other players, and then that's totally reasonable. But if that's not the reason and it's financial, I don't really see the sense in it, because you're still going to make a good amount of money this year, and you're really going to set yourself up. He's still a relatively young player. You're still going to set yourself up for a bigger paycheck next offseason.
Sheil Kapadia from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Sheil, thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. Great stuff.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Hey, Sheil, real quick. Is Sheil still with us? I believe so.
Yeah, I got you. Yep.
I've got to ask you, on Birds with Friends, which is an awesome podcast you guys do, largely on the Eagles, but it's a lot of fun and a lot of topics. Who did the intro song for you guys? It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was just an enterprising listener. That's what you guys got to do.
Oh,
man. You got to get that free labor. You know, you got to build up the audience and then you know, give them a little pub, give them a little love. It doesn't take much. So thank you for that. That was a talented listener who put that song together.
Yeah, people got to check it out. Birds with Friends and the intro song alone is a blast. And those guys are great. Thanks so much, Sheil.
Take care, guys.
Sheil Kapadia, one of the best in the business. This is a great song.
Yeah, no, it
is. If you're a listener out there and you want to give us a little jingle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rap. A rap. It's very it's some very good rhyming in it. And I was like, man, this is like they got like an actual like recording artist.
Maybe
to,
we could
to
get
do
TD to do something.
Yeah.
TD's daughter.
There you go.
Yeah,
the talent in the family right there.
That's right. No question about it. When we come back, Joe, you have just come out with an article on The Athletic talking about Mike Vrabel and the Titans Ohio State connection. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Muttsen taking you through this Thursday morning. Joe, you have come out with an article as of, 45 minutes ago, I believe? So this is hot off the press.
Fresh.
Fresh right off the press.
Like fresh donuts.
Really connecting the 2012 Ohio State Buckeyes team to the Titans and specifically to what we see out of Mike Vrabel today. So I'm going to let you set this up, and then we'll kind of discuss the ramifications of this. So tell our listeners what your article is about.
Yeah, well, first of all, I got to give Robbie Boring credit for giving me this idea. Titans spokesman just threw this idea at me about the connections. And obviously the Ohio State, we knew about Kerry Combs, who now has gone back to Ohio State. He's the D coordinator now.
Yes.
Who is now coordinating a defense that may not play in 2020, but you know, that's obviously a great job for him to get D coordinator at Ohio State. You're talking about a guy who was a high school coach. Most of his career was at Cincinnati. Urban Meyer brought him over. But there are four connections. Shane Bowen, of course, basically the sort of at least de facto D coordinator in some instances this year, not officially the D coordinator, still the outside linebackers coach, but a bigger role. He was a grad on that 2012 Ohio State team that went 12-0, was on probation, could not play in the postseason, actually would have played Notre Dame for the national championship. And the funny thing is that 2012 Ohio State team, as Ohio State fans know, was not a great team. They'd gone 6-7 the year before. They weren't all that talented. So it was kind of an amazing season to even go 12-0. I mean, I covered that team back then, like them beating a not very good Michigan State team, 17-16. They were a pretty average team, especially for Ohio State. But you've got those two. So you've got Vrabel, obviously, and then – John Stryker, who is football ops guy with the Titans, is kind of like Vrabel's assistant in a lot of his duties. And then Zach Kerr is a new quality control coach here who has been an OC in college, has been a running backs coach at Rutgers, was the youngest assistant in the Big Ten. He is here now as a quality control coach. A lot of people won't know that name. And Buckeyes fans won't know probably Kerr and Stryker and even Bowen back then. They were sort of the unpaid grunts who were working up. I mean, college football programs and pro too, but these college programs, especially the big ones, rely on a lot of people who are making nothing. Like Shane Bowen is making $1,000 a month, living in his parents' house, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. And then, by the way, you're in grad school, so get your homework done. And that's a lot of the work to get the coaches ready to prep for games and stuff. So those guys, anonymous guys on that 2012 team, now they're here with the Titans. So basically I wrote about the 2012 season. I got Urban Meyer on the phone, and he had a lot of really good stuff, especially about the interview with Vrabel, which Vrabel bombed. And Urban was already not going to hire him. Then he bombs the interview because he's like, teach me, how will you teach a college kid? So Vrabel's saying all his football knowledge, which of course Vrabel has a ton of football knowledge, but it's like, no, an 18-year-old who doesn't know any of this stuff, how do you teach him? Well, he gave him a chance the next day. Vrabel came with a much better presentation, got the job, turned out to be like his superstar recruiter or one of them. So a lot of it is about that season and about the Lynx and how it kind of translates to the Titans. But I, as I'm going through this, you do think about the college NFL thing. And I think when Vrabel left Urban's staff after the 2013 season, some people were surprised, but he had kids in school. And the life of an NFL coach gives you at least some chance to go to a kid's ball game.
You can actually see your family as like an NFL head coach.
In the summer, you actually have time off where you, you know, you are just actually being a person. College coaches, I mean, recruiting is on your mind 24 hours a day. In the summer, there's camps. You always are thinking about it, doing stuff to help it. And you're always on the road during live periods. And that was what Urban's question was. Like, okay, this guy's made $20 million in the NFL. He's going to go – he had a quote in the story. Urban's like, he's going to go drive to Peoria at 11 p.m.? Like, I don't buy it. As they found out, Vrabel loves football. And, yes, he wants to do this stuff. But one thing I thought as I'm writing this is, at some point, what happens, like with Nick Saban, he realizes, man – LSU was kind of sweet because I had the best players every week, maybe all but 1 or 2 weeks. And I talked to Kerry Combs about this for the story. It's like, are you okay now being back with your phone all the time and worried about recruiting? He's like, yeah, you know, like recruiting. If you're good at recruiting, at some point, some coaches are attracted to the college game because, let's face it, you can give yourself the best roster. In this league, the NFL, with everything designed to go 8-8, that can get old, and it's hard to have continuity and long-term 10 years with teams because, I mean, you're just naturally going to cycle down.
Right.
You know, some, obviously, Bill Belichick being a prime example of that not happening, 21st year about to start. But I did wonder, you know, at some point, could Mike Vrabel be Ohio State's head coach? So, of course, I took that leap at the end of the piece, but it's not really about that. But I do think it's an interesting thing when you're a great recruiter. And if your kids are out of the house now and it's a little less of a thing,
right,
would that be attractive to it? Would it be like a Saban, where Saban was like, man, got Dante Culpepper quarterback. You know, we didn't get Drew Brees. We're 8-8 or whatever. I'm going to go to Bama. Just load up.
After saying, no, I'm not going there.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm not going to be the coach at Alabama. It's an interesting discussion on the NFL, college, the pluses and minuses. If you can go to one of those elite programs in college, you know, it's a lot of work and it's different, but it's also nice to have better players every time you play football. You tend to look like a better coach.
And Vrabel is, I mean, he's 45. So, look, I think Vrabel's going to be the head coach of the Titans for a long time. But what does that mean in the NFL? Like how long is a long time? Like, is Vrabel going to be the head coach of the Titans 10 years from now? I mean, the chances are no. I think there's a decent chance that he will be just because I think he's done a really good job. But as you said, Joe, like, this league is designed for you to be 8-8. I mean, it's designed for everybody to be even. Now, you got Tannehill right now. You've got Henry right now. You feel pretty good about the core of this team. There's going to come a point in time where you don't feel good about the core of this team because – Tannehill will be gone. Henry will be gone. The defense will have to recycle through some players. There's inevitably at some point going to be a downturn unless you just get this incredible stroke of good fortune and a once-in-a-generation player like the Patriots had with Tom Brady. I mean, there are exceptions, but by and large, 10 years is a long time to be a coach in the NFL. At 45 years of age, I mean, I think Vrabel's got a long time left in the world of football. Maybe he does consider that one day to go into the world of college football.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I agree that right now I think it's set up for him to have a long tenure. I think that you have to look at coach and GM and how they work together and how good they are. You know, right now you look at the Titans. I mean, this is the Vray-Rob era. You know, it's Vrabel and J-Rob together. Yep. And obviously Robinson has overall, I think, done a really good job, has made this – team competitive. Like you said, what happens when, who knows when that will be, because some quarterbacks last a long time and maybe Tannehill will keep this level or close to it for a long time, but some point you're going to have to find another quarterback not too far down the line. It's just the NHL more than anything, but in all these leagues, at some point it's like the coach is, well, you switch up the coach.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot more security in a place, in one of those places, and one of those places that just has way more resources than everyone, that has way better players than everyone, that has just this incredible fan base. And, I mean, you're talking, I mean, Ohio State, it's impossible. They packed that place for spring games because it's like people, it's so many people, it's their only chance to see them live because they can't get in for a real game for a 100,000-plus seat stadium.
Yeah.
That's Ohio State football. So I had the, you know, the hypothetical of, you know, Ryan Day, he might be Ohio State's coach for the next 25 years. I think he'd probably sign up for that right now and be just fine with that. It's been pretty amazing for him to come in there in 17 and get that opportunity. And remember, Vrabel tried to hire him here, or at least was interested in him for here. So you think about him, though, he's from New Hampshire. So let's take the Belichick domino of he retires in New England, and that's the one job Ryan Day is like, oh, the New England Patriots.
The Patriots.
The elite of the elite. And now Ohio State's open. I mean, if I'm the Buckeyes, I'm certainly, if I'm Gene Smith, I mean, this is one of my first calls.
Yeah. I think Vrabel could be a great recruiter. I really do.
No, he is a great recruiter.
Yeah, I think he
and it's
be
not
awesome.
Surprising. Yeah. No, it's perfect. I mean, like, the kid, first of all, if you have that kind of, you know, you have that kind of pro background and you've been a great player in the league and have Super Bowl rings, that automatically puts you on a different level than a lot of people you're recruiting against.
Yes.
But then the person, you know, and getting in the home, wrestling with the kids and all this stuff, yeah.
Did you see the mic'd up video the Titans released yesterday of Vrabel?
I did not.
It's every bit as awesome as you would imagine it would be.
Are there some bleeps?
Oh, there's a lot of bleeps. A lot of them.
I'll have to check that out.
It's pretty cool. It's on their Twitter account. They released it yesterday. Go have a listen. It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
Like, yelling at people, trying to figure out where the right tackle is when he's standing right next to him, trying to get Isaiah Wilson's attention. It's awesome.
Nice, nice. Well, the thing is, and Vrabel made this point in the piece, you know, he's like, look, it translates. I mean, he had a quote. It's like, Alabama and Clemson, you know what the difference between those guys and our guys? That we're paying our guys.
Yes.
You know, like it's 21-year-olds or 23-year-olds. So he relates well. And that was another question, too. Sometimes, like, oh, can a college guy relate to the pro guys? But, you know, he seems to work in either game pretty well.
When we come back, Teresa Walker from the Associated Press will join us. She is the do-it-all woman here in Nashville sports media. That's next. This is Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.